Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And guys, today we are talking about pop quiz again on deal structuring. So our last series of episodes was a pop quiz on everything about creative financing, and we covered pretty much everything, I think, on that last series. So if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to that. Because really good information in there. And, you know, Jeff just put me on the spot to find out how much I know about creative financing. And, I think I did pretty well.
You had your moments.
Yeah. There was a few things I couldn't answer, but other than that, I did pretty good. So now guys, we're talking about, deal structuring. So Jeff's going to quiz me on, I guess, how to structure. He's going to give me some information and, ask me how I would structure some offers. Is that right, Jeff?
What we're going to do is I'm going to ask you some questions very similar to what we did in the last series, but then we're going to back it up with some examples of going through some numbers so that you get a better feel for how to use, you know, how these numbers come together, how they fit together, why you'd want to use this rather than that. Okay. Creative financing is not just throwing something together and saying, hey, we've got owner financing for 10 years. We've got to be careful that the numbers fit like a puzzle.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. Okay.
So this will be an absolute work in progress because we're both of us are going to be working through some of this stuff through our calculators as we go, as you should. I think this will be very informative for our listeners. And at least I hope that's the hope.
Yeah, and we always tell our listeners out there that if you're not in a position where you can run through the numbers on a financial calculator, go back and listen to these episodes because that will solidify what we're talking about, right? That's going to bring it all home. It's going to wrap it all together in a nice little package for you that you can actually present to a seller.
That's right.
Okay.
Let's get this started.
So this will be...
Go ahead.
This will be a few episodes. I'm not sure how many yet, but
three or four
series.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the first question that I have to you, Jonathan, and this is a question that I ask every single deal. Now I'm a wholesaler, and so I'm looking at primarily selling this property to someone. Mm-hmm. If I'm looking to acquire these properties, then I'm going to have a little different criteria, right?
Yep.
So as a wholesaler, who are my potential buyers?
So your potential buyers or kind of three groups, the owner occupants could be your potential buyer, sure. Landlords, and then guys that flip houses, you know, the flippers out there.
Okay, and I don't know if you remember this because we've talked about this a number of times, right? Through a bunch of different episodes. I have one other category, and it doesn't necessarily fit with wholesaling, but it's another strategy that can be used if the deal is right. Do you remember what that is?
Wholetailing?
Correct. Yeah. So I call it wholetailing retailing, right? Because sometimes. Yeah,
so I guess that would go to a retail buyer then.
It's you know, a property that you're going to acquire very short term, put it right back on the market, either as is or very close to being as is, selling it either for retail or, you know, discounted. but being able to get more for the property.
Yeah. Okay.
So I like to include that as my fourth strategy. And it might be where, hey, I can't get it quite low enough cash wise for it to be a wholesale deal where it would make sense for a rehabber and or a landlord, but it would make sense condition wise and price wise for us to purchase it, put it right back on the market.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about what are some of the things a seller might be asking for or circumstances that would dictate us selling to an owner occupant? I'm not sure if I explained that, but what kind of things present themselves from a seller that would immediately say, hey, we're most likely going to have to sell this property to an owner occupant?
Equity. If there's not a lot of equity in the house, if it's kind of a tighter deal, sometimes selling it to an owner occupant works.
So little to no equity, right?
Yeah, little to no equity and no cash flow. Because if there's cash flow and it's decent amount of cash flow, you can sell it to a landlord. If there's a decent...
So the monthly payment could have something to do with it as well, right?
Yeah, yep. And then down payment. That's another big thing. How much do they need up front? Because...
Well, I'm impressed you got all three that I listed right there. Down payment,
yep.
The monthly payment, and... I called it the price. It's really the amount of equity, right? So so if someone's asking basically retail price with little to no equity, you know, they may have some equity or they may not. But if they're asking around retail price, they're asking for top monthly payment, right? So yep. Either they have existing debt or yep, that's what they want to be receiving. And they want, you know, on the higher side of a down payment. And just when we're dealing with an owner occupant, what would be the down payment that we're shooting for the seller?
The down payment that we're looking to give the seller?
Yeah. If we already know that, hey, they're asking retail basically or close to it, or they have little equity.
Yeah, so we're looking to get in somewhere around 5 to 7% down, because we can go and sell it to an owner occupant and reasonably expect 10% down, so we can capture a little fee there. Now those numbers will change based on the sales price, right? You know, lower end properties might not we might need to give a little less because we need more of a margin. Higher end properties, you know, the percentage changes on that scale.
Sure. So let's look at an example. Let's look at a property that has an ARV of like 240. It'll rent for 16. It's got a payment of 1400 PITI. And, you know, let's just say that it doesn't have much equity. So, yeah, maybe they have a loan of 215, 220, something like that. Immediately, is this something that we could sell to a rehabber?
No, there's not enough equity.
Is it something we could look at doing to a landlord?
No, there's not enough cash flow.
Right, and rents are only a couple hundred dollars more. That's not going to excite really anyone.
No,
and there's little to no equity, right? So they're basically asking retail price for the property. This leaves us with one potential buyer, which is an owner occupant. And as long as what do you think is going to be one of the very critical criteria for us to want to be getting involved in these types of properties? Yeah. So we've already talked about, hey, you know, the down payment's got to be right for us. We already know that. The monthly payment, they're asking, you know, close to market or market rate rents. Uh-huh. The price is already there. Can you think of one other criteria that might have something to do with our decision whether we would want to move forward with this kind of deal?
Yeah, it's whether or not the seller is looking to buy a house immediately after.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think of that. That's a really good point.
So the second one that you might have been thinking of would be we need, you know, 3 to 5 years of a term. Is that what you were thinking?
No, I was thinking condition.
Obviously,
the more kind of work this property needs, it's probably not going to cater to as many owner occupants, right? The worse it looks, the less people are going to be interested. It could be dated, but in really good shape that would get a lot of people interested.
Yes, you're right.
But you are right too, that, you know, we're always, at least that my business model is that, you know, we're not doing any kind of owner financing unless it's some kind of rehab or flip or wholetale, which would be our short-term financing, which is, you know, 5 months on the low end to maybe a year. We could also do any kind of, you know, income property that we are turning around, right? So we're increasing the NOI and, you know, we want a new value. But if we're selling to an owner occupant, my lowest amount of term that I will go is 3 years. That's kind of my thing. And if a seller's like, oh, I only want to go 2, I would try to negotiate. All right, I'll go 2, but I want the right to extend it for an additional year if need be.
Yeah.
That's so good. Term was a good point to bring up. And what was the other one that you brought up? What was the other point?
If they're looking to buy a house immediately after, because then, you know, they'll have to carry that debt on their debt to income ratio, and it probably won't work.
Now, at that point, in this case, it's kind of interesting, right? Because if we're not talking about being in, you know, a really hot market, like a lot of the markets are across the country right now, these people may have very little equity, right? That this person really can't go list this property on the MLS because, you know, they're going to eat up all their equity, whatever equity they have left through real estate commissions. And if, you know, it's a normal market, this is the kind of house that could really stay on the market long term. So they really may not have a choice. They may say, we don't want to do that, but you know, that their motivation may change a bit over some time. If, hey, the goal is we can't continue to make this payment for whatever reason, we got to move. And maybe we got to rent for a while.
Yeah. Yep. Right.
All right. So we just talked about that we want to get in light as far as a down payment, right?
Yep.
So what was the numbers that you were giving and right now I think we're going to focus a little more on owner occupants. And then in a future episode, I think we're going to deal more with landlords. Because now their numbers are different, right?
Yeah. It's really two different categories.
Yes.
But the main point that we've been harping on is you need to determine your buyer first. And if your buyer is an owner occupant, then this is kind of how we structure terms. This is kind of the process.
And just to preface that, you can have multiple buyers that could, you know, potentially sell a property to, right? I mean, a property could need a bunch of rehab and a rehabber would be interested, but it's a good price range. It would create good rents. So a landlord could be interested in it.
Yeah.
And it's got enough equity in it that we might be able to wholetail it. So we may have numerous exit strategies to consider. Sometimes we only have one.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And in the scenario, which we're talking about here, where, you know, the purchase price is somewhere close to market, you know, the monthly payment is somewhere close to market rents and they don't have any real equity or they got little to no equity. This is the scenario. This is our buyer then that we would go out and find.
All right. So, you had mentioned that when we're looking for, you know, an owner occupant, that we're probably not going to offer the seller, you know, really more than 5 to 7% down, right?
Yeah, and that number, that's not a hard number.
Right.
So it's more of a rule of thumb.
Yeah. I mean, if you're dealing with a $50,000 property, you probably can get away with, 10%. And you're dealing with a $300,000 property, to be honest, 7% is probably more than I would want to pay.
Yeah, that's 21,000.
Right. So what we're looking at, and the reason that we want to get in late is that, our buyers sometimes dictate how much our expectation should be that we'll get back from them. So owner occupants, in my experience, our expectations should be 10%.
Yeah, right.
That doesn't mean that you will advertise so that you always get 10%. Are there times that you might get a little less? Sure, yeah. It's possible. So if the house is, on a busy road, or it's funky, or it's got a bunch of repairs that are needed, may drive down the price. Maybe it's not in the best area. Could you get more than 10%?
Yeah.
Oh, all the time. It happens all the time. The real issue is that if you go in expecting that you'll get more than 10%, you might not be very happy. Right.
Yeah. So yep.
I'm confident that, hey, if I make a deal for a $300,000 home to put down $17,000, I'm comfortable that I am going to get significantly more than that. I feel I'll be in that 30-ish thousand dollar range that pays me, $13,000 or so. Makes sense?
Yep. And this changes in every market. Every market's going to be different.
Right. So right.
Just keeping that in mind.
Yeah. So the real key is try to get in light. The lighter, the better, right? I mean,
lighter the better.
If you were actually going to pay this money as the down payment, you would be at risk, right? So yep. I would advocate two things. One is, we would prefer not to put this money down, because if we don't, we have the opportunity to go find our buyer and have them put the money down instead of us, where there's literally no risk, right?
Yep.
And if we did have to take the risk, it's because the deal is just too good not to. I'll tell you that what we've done in the past is that I may say, hey, Jonathan, I'll buy your house, then I'll give you $17,000 down payment on your $300,000 home and, the rest of the terms. But I'm not the one going to be living in the property. We're going to have to go find that person, and we need 30 days to go do it. If at the end of 30 days we're not successful, you can fire us. We'll walk away. You owe us nothing. But we're good at what we do. I expect that we'll be able to find a good person that we can put into the house. Is that good with you?
Yes.
They'll either say yes or no, right? And then most of the time they will say okay. If they said no, I gotta move, I need a commitment, I need to get this done in 10 days. All right, I can certainly understand that. We're probably not going to be the best fit in terms of trying to find our buyer first. However, we could buy it, and then we can go find our buyer on our own, but we would have to modify some of those terms.
Right.
I no longer can come with 17. I could come with 8. If that would work for you, then, we could sign an agreement now and we could close, in the next 3 days or whatever the case may be. Now, if you get a nice house, a pretty house in a good area, in semi-good condition with a pretty good payment and a seller that's interested in, giving it to you for little to no money down, $5,000, $7,000, $8,000, you should probably take it.
Right.
It's probably going to pay off for you. So, so we're going to mitigate our risk, right? So through our down payment. All right, so let's cover one more question, then we'll wrap this up.
Okay. So
what would be a good monthly payment for a property? How do we determine that? We've done a lot of deal structuring, and Yeah, well, we talk about my little hybrid interest rate kind of thing where I just kind of pick payments out of thin air. And, we are punching numbers into our calculator back and forth. But how do we know when we're looking at a lead that, you know, that they owe some money on the property? And, they might not even owe that much, but they might have a really high interest rate. And we were dealing with someone that we're buying a property for like 40 or 50, and they owed 90, but their interest rate was almost 7%. And so they had some equity, but their underlying loan was pretty high.
Yeah.
How do we know, you know, what's a good payment? What's an adequate payment? What's just a payment that's too high?
So a great payment, to answer your question, is zero. I mean, if I could pay zero a month for a property, that's the best payment I can get, right? But
do you have a lot of those? You might get that for short term, but you're not getting that long term. Yeah.
So no, the answer, what's a good payment, is it affordable? Is it affordable? You know, if someone is looking to buy a house in the $200,000 range, they probably can't afford $2,000 a month, right? They're probably right in that $1,500 range, $1,600 range. So really this question depends on the market. And it depends on, you know, what prices are going for, affordability, that kind of thing. I don't know if that answers your question, Jeff, but
yeah, I think that
always, I mean, the example you used, well, they have an underlying debt of 7%. Well, that's, you know, or I mean, the interest rate of 7%, that could be really high. That can make for a really high payment, especially if interest rates are, you know, in the 3s and 4s%, right? If you were to go out and get a loan. So it comes down to affordability. Can someone, you know, can a blue collar worker afford to make that payment in that area?
So I think, I like your explanation. I think it's good, affordable. But affordable can be looked at in a number of different ways. And so let's try to be a little more specific here. So I like to do two things, right? One, if the property would make sense as a rental. And when I say that, you know, some of your 500,000, your higher end type properties, sometimes they are rentals, but they don't rent as well as, you know, as their purchase price, right? We're nowhere near like that 1% rule kind of thing. So,
yeah.
So it's kind of hard to use that to gauge, you know, where that payment should be. But, you know, let's say, you know, median price range, under median price range, and, you know, a little bit over median price range.
Yeah.
Look at the rents, right? So what would this property rent for? And at least be in that range, right? You know, if something rented for $1,600 and your payment's going to be $1,850 principal and interest, you still got to add in taxes and insurance, and maybe the property needs some work. I'd be a little leery. I'd be a little concerned. My payment might be too high.
Yeah.
I might be able to compensate for that in some ways, like, hey, if I can offer a long term, if I could offer a smaller down payment, something to that effect. But that would be something that I would be like, I'm a little concerned about that payment.
Yeah. Yeah. So broadly, is it affordable? Specifically, what's the median rents in the area? Because if someone is, you know, if they can't buy a property, they're going to be renting. And so what are those prices? I like that.
The other thing I would tell you is that, so I'm going to take out my calculator. So okay. Let's say that we're looking at a property that's worth $200,000.
Okay.
And let's say that they owe like $107,000. And they've got a payment of $900 a month PITI.
Okay. Yeah.
The property is worth $200. So right away, I would know that, hey, that payment's good. Right. Even a $200,000 home with a down payment, even with good interest rates right now, that that would be within that range for sure.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
So let's kind of figure this out for a second. So if the ARV was 200 or
that present value,
let's think that we're going to either sell it for that, or we're going to base our purchase price on that with a down payment. So let's say that, hey, we're going to get 10% down. So we're going to put $180,000 as present value, right?
Okay.
And let's say, I just like to use 4%. Now, 4% is just kind of in the middle, right? Okay. I know that interest rates are less than that right now. I know you can get less than that. And I also know that, you know, you'll still see some interest rates at the 3.5s and the 4s. And the, so it's always kind of like right in the middle.
Yeah.
4% amortized over 30 years. So 360 is in.
Yep.
What's your payment?
$859.35.
Yeah. So that's, remember, principal and interest. We always still have to add taxes and insurance. So yeah. that's at 4%. Yeah, you know, we can just play around with this a little and just put 3.5 in. That's now 808. And we could put in 3%. That's 758. We could put 4.5 in, and that's 912. Now let's say that this property would rent for $1,250 a month.
Okay.
So, you know, taxes are $100 a month. Insurance is going to be $35 a month. You know, is this payment good, first of all?
Yeah.
Yeah, it super good, right? I mean, you could probably stay in the middle of this one if you liked and created a passive income either through a lease option or, you know, buy it on terms, sell it on terms, be the bank in the middle and create a cash flow. You could probably figure out a way to wholesale this to a landlord because there's enough cash flow or potential cash flow. Or you could just pass on the savings to an owner-occupant. And this might make up for condition of a property or being on a busy street or maybe not in the best area, maybe a little funkiness to the property when you can offer a good payment. What are owner occupants most, what are the two things that they're most concerned about with owner finance?
Down payment and monthly payment, and that's probably right. And I don't
maybe know. Term, right? Perhaps, but that, for sure those two, that can disqualify them right away. So if they can actually pay less than what they thought they'd be paying, even if they went to the bank and they can't go to the bank, that's a deal, right? That's a deal for them. Now they may overlook some repair costs or whatever else that you may have to overcome.
Yeah.
But that's what I like to do to kind of make sure that a payment is going to fit within a certain range. The rents, affordability, and then, hey, what would someone be paying if they could go and get a conventional loan? Even as an owner-occupant, they'd be only putting down 3%, so instead of 10, right, or 2.5%. But that's all right, because I'm just trying to get a range. It does not have to be exact.
Right. Yep. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up here, Jeff. Yes. Because we really covered a lot on owner-occupant, and that's good because it's kind of another category of buyer. And you got a first thing that you like to look at on these deals, Jeff, is what's your exit strategy?
Yeah, so I want to know who my buyers
are. Begin with the end in mind. Yeah, so I think we covered that, and I think we did a good job about that. So yeah, we'll end it here. This will be part one in our series. Guys, if you have not rated and reviewed our show, please do so on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps bump our numbers, in their algorithm, and it helps them get or suggest this to other people who might be interested in the same content. So we're really looking to bump up our subscribers this year And if you have not subscribed, definitely subscribe to our show. But yeah, leave us a review as well, because I know they're the shows with the most reviews, they're recommending those as content to other podcast listeners. So please go do that. That would help us out in a big way. If you guys have not gotten Jeff's video on structuring terms step-by-step using creative financing, text CFP or creative financing to 877-409-8090. And then you guys can find us on Facebook. We got a Facebook group at the Creative Financing Podcast. If you guys are working on a deal and you need help, please post it on there. We're trying to build a community there that can help each other out. Jeff and myself pop on there from time to time, and you know, we give our time to help people structure deals. All of our episodes can be found at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. That's our archive. And then if you guys are interested in Jeff's apprenticeship program, please email Rebecca@weofferoptions.com. Anything else, Jeff?
Creative Financing Academy hopefully is up and running by the time that you hear this episode. And it's an education program strictly on teaching creative financing, and I think we've found a way to do it that will allow you to learn as quickly as you would like to go and be able to use it in your own business, even more of an extent of listening to this podcast. Between the two, you should be golden. So yes. Go to the creativefinancingacademy.com. Or, you know, pop up in our Facebook group, let us know. And
or you can leave us a voicemail on our hotline.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to that, guys. Okay. Until next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.